Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Mason. I run R&D, design all of our holsters, fun stuff like that. Joined today, as always, by Kevin Mason, the owner, CEO, president, man in charge, and Brett Davis. He runs our gun shop. He is our firearms expert, and we're going to talk to him a lot today about all things firearms.
Threw me all the way under the bus.
All the way under. Like
Episode Brett.
Episode Brett, 45 seconds in, and here we go.
They don't even know who Brett is. Well, it's been your friend thus far that you work with.
All he's done
is
talk crap about how we overtalk him, so we're just going to let him talk for an hour.
Yeah, for 4 weeks. All you guys do is talk to each other. I don't get any airtime, so ask and you shall receive.
Even my wife that talks more than anybody is like, you guys are overtalking me. Like, you're just not used to anybody else talking.
It's like, well, we're pretty interesting guys. We got a lot of stuff to say. So.
Well, in the normal world, neither of you talk. Let's just be honest.
Well, maybe because we don't like you.
That is true. We are fairly quiet when, you know, kind of not self-absorbed, but like, you know, just kind of introverted when it comes to being, you know, social, and you get us in front of a microphone and you got to look at me all of a sudden.
Then we got Brett in the gun shop that wants to talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the Platte City hangout for shooting the crap.
Come in there, smoke some cigarettes.
Yeah, we need a smoke bench and he'll be good.
Well, if we can get like a vent hood over the top of them at a station where we can just vent it outside. Yeah,
then we don't need smoke breaks no more.
Yeah, look like a chimney. But all right, so on today's episode.
That will be his next employee, by the way.
All right, let's start.
All right.
Welcome, Muddy family.
Welcome. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about... as a company, some of our favorite concealed carry guns that are popular, stuff that a lot of our customers have had good luck with. Not necessarily all-encompassing list or that these are the best things or the only things because there's a million guns out there, but just kind of a general 10,000-foot guide of what's really popular and why we think they're good and, you know, maybe what's not so great about them. We'll talk a little bit about some different calibers, popular guns, semi-autos versus revolvers, kind of all that. We'll get into got an article we're going to go over to Dale today about concealed carry in the news. Kind of interesting about school boards allowing concealed carry for staff members in schools and the trend with that. But we'll kind of wrap all that up and then have our viewer question of the week. But let's just kick it off and go with some of the top, you know, most popular concealed carry guns out there. Just starting with the basics as far as calibers. So what are the most popular calibers that people are carrying in?
First off, I would like to start by, I'm no expert, like Kyle said earlier. I am just a hobbyist that happens to work at a gun shop. All right, let's start with that. As far as popularity, 9mm is by far the most popular caliber. Probably not just in our shop here in Kansas City area. I would assume it's across the country. It's easiest to find, cheapest to find most of the time. And whenever a pandemic happens or something like that happens, 9mm is usually the easiest one to find to help yourself out.
Well, and with the price being lower and, like you said, more available, it goes back to what we talk about all the time, is training. And you can actually find ammo so you can train with it instead of having some obscure caliber that even if you wanted to train, you probably aren't going to shoot your last 20 rounds at the range when you need them, you know, for self-defense.
For sure.
So as far as the 9 versus like the 380 and 45, 9 is the most popular. And is that just, do you think round capacity is why it became that way? Or
round capacity is definitely a plus, and the technology. So 9mm plus P rounds have caught up to, let's say, 40 Smith & Wesson, which everybody knows a majority of the police departments across the country carried 40 Smith & Wesson, and they've been jumping back and forth from 9mm to 40 Smith & Wesson over the years. Now I think majority of them are at 9mm now. Just the critical defense ammo or the critical duty ammo that cops use a lot of times, the technology is just there. It's got a better ballistic. So it's not necessarily a bigger bullet. So the knockdown power is maybe not as much, but it penetrates further and does more damage. And that's what they're looking at, you know, statistically. And for us, it comes down to what everybody's carrying. You have to have it. And as far as 380 goes, 45, wonderful calibers. I'm not bashing 40. I'm not bashing any of it. Just in our area, 40 doesn't sell anymore. It's just, there's still guys that have it. And there's, because there's a lot of handguns. There's a lot of guns that, you know, take 40 Smith & Wesson. But so you have to carry it. Am I wrong? Would you say that's wrong, Kevin?
No, we got to carry the ammo still for sure. But as a gun shop, I couldn't tell you the last 40 that you've actually ordered that I'm aware of as far as a new pistol. Because when we first opened, we had a few thinking that we would need them. And I think they sat there for a couple years.
When I started this roughly 17 years ago, that's what majority of the customers bought was 40 Smith & Wesson. But 9 was still just starting to take off, and now it's completely flipped. And it's just a wonderful caliber now for across the board, Plinkin, self-protection, all the above.
So when you're talking about, you know, concealed carry ammo, you kind of touched on defense rounds. I know Hornady makes a critical defense. When I worked security, we all had I believe they were Speer Gold Dots is what they recommended. You know, and we're not sponsored by any of them, so... For concealed carry, though, you definitely want some sort of defense round, not just, you know.
Yeah, so the defense round, it has an expandable bullet. So when it hits a target, it expands and does all the damage in that one area. A target round that you would shoot at paper or anything like that is a solid bullet, and it's more likely to just penetrate and go through the target, hit the backdrop as well, whether that may be other people, walls, whatever it may be. So if you're truly defending yourself, you're going to want a critical defense or something Hydra Shock from Federal or Speer Gold Dot from, you know, all the above. We're not really recommending a certain brand, because I will tell you, in the gun shop, you have to try all of them, because some guns don't like certain brands. Some guns don't like certain self-defense ammo. We're not going to get too deep into that today. But
I will say on that subject, as far as training and shooting, don't shoot Full Metal Jacket and assume that whatever defense round you're carrying is going to shoot the same.
Absolutely not.
Because it does not all the time. Sometimes it does, but not all the time.
Yeah, and I actually had that on my notes here, because you'll see people go buy, you know, 1,000 rounds of bulk, cheapest, whatever, you know, XYZ ammo brand. And I always wondered, you know, at short distance it may not matter, but I think if you get out at all, it'd probably have...
And the other thing is, talking about all these concealed carry guns, kind of a start to that is, you got to realize, no matter if it's us or anybody else and what brand it is, so it's not bashing any of them, you got a sample of one of one. So just because a Glock 19 is super reliable for everybody doesn't always mean yours is going to be. And I'm just using Glock 19 as an example. But I've had a lot of guns I've done reviews on that were great and shot thousands rounds through them and never an issue. Then people in the comments, well, I've had problems and this and that.
But they could have one 30-cent spring that's defective on there.
It's springs, it's ammo. There's certain guns that won't shoot certain ammos as well.
The way that you're gripping the gun can cause malfunctions. And that's one topic that we'll probably get on into the future. We're not really trainers or anything like that, but, you know, muzzle jump or any kind of grip angle, anything can affect the way that your gun shoots. So, go ahead.
Now, what about optics? Because you're adding weight to the slide. Will that, like, how do optics affect the cycling of the handgun?
On 9mm, it doesn't seem too as bad, but I have noticed on some of the 380s, because it doesn't have as much... what's that, recirculation or whatever,
recoil.
The slide. Yeah, recoil pressure of the slide. They will sometimes, but the worst, and it's not even normally 380, but the 22s, there's so many of these 22 pistols on the market now, the SIG 322, the FN502, all of those are going to optics because guys are using them as trainer pistols. The Glock 44, same thing. 22s by nature are not super reliable in pistols anyways. But you put an optic on one of those, it seems to be the most problem. Yeah. But it could happen with any of them.
You're also starting to see optics go from aluminum to polymer frame as well. So you're going to have a few options to help combat that problem, you know, with 22s or 380s. Even 9s, because there's going to be some 9s that have pretty big slides, heavy slides. You know, you start putting optics on top of that, you could see a potential for a problem.
And talking about 22s, I've always heard, you know, and you people can carry whatever they're comfortable carrying. I always heard the drawback to a 22 being a rimfire cartridge. It's not as reliable as a center-fired 9mm 380, so a lot of trainers won't recommend 22 for self-defense, and it's a smaller round and stuff on top of it as well.
22 would be better than not having anything, but it's not anywhere close to ideal for just a defense situation. There is zero stopping power to that. I mean,
there's statistics out there that 22 kills more people in the country. I don't know what the numbers are, and I don't know if it's true or not. You hear it all the time, but I'm going to tell you right here, I'll never stand in front of one. I'm not gonna test that theory, whether it's going to work or not.
So. I wonder, and I don't know, I'm just talking, I wonder if that stat you're talking about is because more people have random 22s, you know, old 22 pistols. People that have no training background of firearms out there messing with 22 pistols.
Well, and so. I think it's kind of like more people are killed by cows than sharks. Well, think about how many more people come in contact with a cow than a shark in their daily life. Everybody's grandpa, like you said, had a 22, so there's more of them out there, so it's a higher probability that people are going to run across one. And a lot of young people, like I know when we first got guns and started shooting, it was a 22, and you'd take your 22 out to the woods and plink around. So, I mean, it could be younger and experienced shooters as well.
Correctly. Did you say more people were killed by cows and sharks?
Yeah.
Never heard that.
Oh, yeah. Cow farts? You didn't know about all that?
Okay.
No, not the cow farts, but like people getting like kicked and trampled and stuff like that. Sounds good, if not.
Unless you go to the Bahamas and you watch the news here.
So if you're watching this podcast and you can Google it and prove either Brett or I wrong, if you prove Brett wrong, I'll send you a hat. First person that proves Brett wrong, you get a hat. So
it's Google. You don't believe everything you see on the internet.
But
just know that I'm right.
I trust our customers and our followers of our podcast to give us correct information. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy.
Kevin's like,
all right, moving on.
Moving right on. So we talked about the calibers. There are a bunch of really popular guns. Brett, like we said, this is your episode, bud. What are you selling a lot of in the gun shop? What are people asking for? What are, like, you know, not the top 10, but what are the go-to concealed carry guns or the popular ones?
You've got your main brands in our shop is Glock, SIG, and Springfield right now. Smith & Wesson's really coming on strong right now because they've been coming out with the metal, a few models that are really nice.
Are the equalizers selling very well?
Yeah, the equalizer is basically the new model of the EZ Shield that they came out with. And don't take this the wrong way, but it's a wonderful option for elderly, you know, men and women that don't have the strength to pull back a handgun, that scenario. It's a wonderful option. So the equalizer is basically the same gun, but they made it a double stack, so it holds more rounds.
So is the EZ, does that designate it's like easier to charge or cycle?
Yes. So it's basically, it's a hammer-fired gun, and that's how they got it so easy, but it's really simple to rack the slide on top. So, and they also made some serrations, put some grips on the back of the slide. They made some other options to make it easier for you as well, but the spring isn't as stout on that gun as a normal handgun.
But what I've noticed is even though there's like the equalizer now, but EZ9 and EZ380, the 9 was drastically harder to work than the 380 version.
Yeah.
It's because of the recoil difference.
Different springs
and things. It's still better than a traditional slide, but it's not the 380. So like if you look at Ruger's Security 380, it's a light rack. It's a 380. Because it's easier to work.
And those equalizers, they've got not per se a safety. It's more like a passive safety where in the back of the grip, you have to push it in.
They actually have both.
They have both?
They do offer a
safety.
They
all have the grip safety.
Yeah, they have the grip safety, and they also offer an option with a manual safety as well.
Okay.
So,
all right.
That is something that a lot of companies are going away from and some are sticking to because there are customers that want a safety on their gun, but Glock, for instance, you're not going to get a safety.
It seems like most of the companies that are still producing weapons with safeties on them, other than the 1911 platform, but as far as a striker-fired platform like that, seems to be all the guns that are more geared towards either the women, elderly, or like an entry-level gun, like what the EZ would be.
Mm-hmm.
because they're not, they don't have the training to feel comfortable with one without the safety.
So, and this may be a bad analogy, and just stop me if it is. It almost seems like, you know, some of these guns are geared to be like a racing bike, like for track, for racing, where some of them are geared to be more like a cruiser type bike.
Once you get to a certain point, yes. As far as the, what I would consider traditional carry guns, you know, anything $700 and under, which is what most people are carrying, are pretty much all in the same wheelhouse. But then if you get up to like Shadow 2 or Staccato or something, they're a whole different animal as far as what they're capable of. Not saying that the other guns aren't capable of that, but for your analogy of it, it really doesn't happen until you get out of the what I would consider really popular carry guns.
Mm-hmm. So do they just have like better internals, like more polished, like better manufacturing specs to them, or just all in all? Just...
Well, if you go to like a Staccato or something, it's not a mass produced gun. It's a custom fit gun.
Hand built, yeah, pretty much. And
different tolerances. It's just a lot of different things to it. To a traditional person, including myself, like I said on the other episode, we have the Staccato at the shop. It's a wonderful gun. It's not something that I'm going to carry, probably. A $3,000 gun carrying just doesn't, I don't feel is needed, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So talk a little bit about the EZs. One of the ones I saw come through that we just did a holster for, the new Legions for the 365, what, AKG Legions?
AXG.
AXG Legions. Those things are sweet.
They're sweet, and you can go to YouTube and check out my video on it. I'm not necessarily a fan of it for what it's made for. It's a sweet gun, but if you look at the 365 series, any of them, the traditional 365 that started with 10 rounds, the 365 series has always been geared towards concealed carry. Even the X Macro is geared towards concealed carry. They're an inch-wide gun, where the AXG Legion doesn't interest me too much. It's not that it doesn't shoot good, but it doesn't shoot that much better than the X Macro, I didn't think. The metal frame does feel good. The grips feel good, but it's all coming with extra weight.
True.
I mean, you go up to a, by the time it's loaded, a 30-something ounce gun. At that point, it's heavy and not what I want to carry. And then the other thing on the AXG Legion is, for a carry gun, I personally want, you know, a thinner one, like an inch thick, which a lot of these new guns are. But the magwell, a part of the AXG series has a flared magwell, which makes reloading mags faster. But it's 1.4 inches. So what's the point of having a thin gun when the grip is what's hard to conceal, and then making the grip an inch and a quarter, or inch and a half, more or less.
And what's the difference in price point? I know the one we have, we make sure the guys aren't banging it around.
It's
because
$500 difference. Is that,
yeah,
four or 500?
It's every bit of, from the Tac Ops is $750 to $800 to $1,250, probably $1,200, $1,250 on the AXG.
But if you're a guy that is going to upgrade, so there's guys that buy the X Macro and then buy a metal frame for it. If you're going to do that, you might as well get the AXG, because you're going to come out with a more... a better gun, I think, with the AXG, if you're going to go that route and don't mind the weight.
Well, and for people that may or may not, you know, have one already, or they're considering getting one, the holsters aren't the same. When they came out, you know, we had tested them in the regular...
In theory, they should be, but they're not. So the metal, being a metal frame, it's the rail part of the gun is that much wider that they do not work. I mean, if you really wanted to, you could heat a Kydex holster up for an X Macro and make it work, but I wouldn't suggest that for people that don't do that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. If not, you're going to get it dragging the inside of your holster
but
a bunch.
The light-bearing holsters are even worse, because then you put the light on it and it intensifies that gap. So the light-bearing holsters, you couldn't heat to make work if you wanted to.
Right. All right, so talk about the Legions. You know, like I said, we're big... big seller of Glock. Just that's what people want. So what are people carrying in Glocks? I know I see a lot of orders I'm making for like 19s, 43s. What are the...
People are always going to carry any of the Glocks, but I'd say the 43 is still the most popular in one of the configurations of it.
43X MOS is probably the top sold one right now in our shop. 19 was huge popularity, but Glock is working on just about every model they can put together. And that, and when I say that, they're putting every slide and every grip frame, they're swapping it back and forth. And like the 49 they just came out with, I believe is a Border Patrol model they created for the Border Patrol. There's just constant. So it's got the longer slide, shorter grip frame, like a 19 grip frame, holds 15 rounds, but it's got a 17 slide on it. That scenario. So
or vice versa. The longer, like 17 grip with a 19 slide.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with Glock is, it's, you know, Glock 19, a Glock 19X, a Glock 45, essentially the same damn guns, different color, different grip length. I mean,
it's a different internal parts, just, and just, they're the same parts, they're just longer or shorter because, it, you know, you got trigger bars are longer or whatever it may be, but that's what changes on some of these models. Obviously, the round count, you know, capacity amount on each one is different. 19X, like Davidson's just came out, that 19X MOS, which is a tan Glock 45. A Glock 45 is the 19 slide with a 17 grip frame. The 19X is a tan version of that with a D-loop on the bottom of it. So
Glock is the traditional, like what you would consider Apple of the phone world. They never really come out with much new, but sell you a new model.
Oh, every time, yep.
Well, instead of the iPhone 13, you got the 14 now, and the camera's two megapixels better.
Well, and I didn't realize that, you know, because when I start making all these molds, I'm scanning every gun, so it doesn't matter to me. But I'm talking to Brett, he's like, oh, well, that gun's this, but, you know, this frame with that side. I'm like, well, and yeah. They just call it a different number. Yeah. They Frankenstein parts together, but I guess whatever works. But that's part of what makes our holsters better, too, because, like I said, I get all sorts of ads on my Facebook all the time, and this weekend, XYZ Holster Company has an ad that pops up, and they're pressing, you can tell it's a Glock frame, but, you know, it's a huge length on this barrel, and they're cutting straight across at different lengths on their trim jigs.
A lot of them make a Glock 19 holster, but don't have it wrap the bottom, so the bottom can be flush, but then they can put a 17 in it or a 26, and it's just not the way we do things, but a lot of people do that for sure.
Yeah, and it was just kind of weird seeing that, and that's why they all stopped flat instead of having that extra curve down there, which after seeing them and handling them enough, it's like definitely a huge benefit, I think, for carrying ours versus others. All right, so talked about some popular guns. It seems like everything we've talked about has been all semi-automatic pistols. Is there a reason for that, just more rounds, or is...
Popularity. I mean, it is more rounds. It's let's see.
They're lighter, easier to shoot.
Easier to shoot, lighter weight to carry, the round count, and just it's just a new time in the world, you know what I mean? Back when they were probably 70s, 80s, something like that, the cops were carrying revolvers, so I'm sure everybody, that was what was available, because semi-autos were all metal back then, and they were heavy, and more expensive and not as reliable, and so things have just changed. They're progressed down reliability, lightweight, you know, just you can do any, they're like a Lego, you know what I mean, handguns, especially Glocks. I know we keep talking about Glock, but they're so popular in the world because cops carry them, security guards carry them, everybody carries a Glock, and they're like a Lego. I mean, you can do whatever you want, any part on that gun, you can change it. That whole entire gun will be completely different if you wanted to. And it's
got more aftermarket parts than anything on the market mm-hmm. combined.
The other one that I've been pretty impressed with since I started working here is Altacanics. Because before I started, you know, I wasn't real familiar with them. Or is that a fairly new gun to the market, or they've been around for a while?
They've been around. It's, you've got the made in the USA part that slowed them down for a long time because they're not made in the USA. They come in, I believe it's
Turkey.
And so you've got that stigmatism stuck with them a little bit, but they're essentially a Glock with a better trigger and extra parts in the box. You get a holster, you get not a good holster, but you get a holster. So there's a video out there of Kevin throwing one in the trash. If anybody ever wants to go see that, that was a good one. But
the issue I have with Canic, I love the Canics. I've never had bad luck with them, but as a whole, the MC9, there was a ton of people that had issues with them. I mean, all over the internet, a ton of issues. The one we still have in the holster shop, I've shot a lot of rounds through it. I've never had an issue in the world, but it still makes a guy think about it. You know, there's not a time I don't shoot that gun that I don't think about everybody else's problems because there are so many of them.
That's funny you say that. I'm not sold one that anybody's ever had a problem with.
Yeah, I don't think we have locally, but I'm just talking about internet. And I mean, I can't tell you the amount of people that have bought holsters for them and then before they ever get the holster, asking if they can return it because they had nothing but problems with the gun.
Do we think it's because they're watching other reviews and they're not giving it a fair chance? Or do we really think they're having problems?
I think they really had problems. I think it was the early batches of them, no different than some of the SIGs. You know, when even the popular guns, and that's why I was alluding to earlier, that no matter what gun it is, it's not going to be guaranteed problem-free. There's no such thing.
Well, no, there's a human element to every
part of this. There's a human element, and even the SIG 365, when it first came out, they had issues that they recalled the first ones. When we
the 380s had the recoil springs were bad.
So, I mean, there's nothing that's outside the realm of possibility.
And maintenance has got to come in, kind of like we touched on briefly last week. You know, if you shoot that gun all the time and you're not cleaning it and it's getting powder and
dirt. The other thing is, and I don't know how much of this affected it or not, but a lot of these guns here recently have been in the COVID times where ammo was harder to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get the factory reman ammo, Angel Fire, prime example. Angel Fire's close to us. We had great luck with them for a long time. I wouldn't trust any of it now. I mean, I had it not shoot through a couple different guns I won't mention. So I take it to like a Glock or something I've had for a long time that I know shoots everything, and it won't shoot. So ammo's part of that too, that no matter what, people think it's always the gun. And that's not always necessarily the fact. So I shouldn't bash Canik too much, but there was overall problems with something along the way.
Well, and you bring up COVID, and that's a great point, because a lot of stuff you're shooting today was made then. And it's not even just the ammo companies. It could be the powder that they're getting or the primers or everything that goes into that.
Well, I mean, casing. I can tell you the amount of people during COVID that you went to, including our shop, and could not find ammo, were buying anything they could buy on the internet. And most of it was reman. Stuff. I mean, it wasn't straight new in the box ammo, or the new in the box ammo. I mean, you got to think how hard they were running to make ammo, or maybe they weren't, or whatever. But, you know, quality control can come into it. So I guess that's a fair point on ammo wise.
Well, quality control and just the workforce in general in that time. I mean, everybody, no matter what industry you were in, you were trying to get people to come to work. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, and we're not talking about anybody specific, but you know, quality control had to have almost just by not necessity, just almost naturally just took a back seat because people, you had to get orders out, and, you know, these companies aren't going to not ship, you know, when they're trying to, like you said, run 2-3 shifts, you know, max production out.
If the demand is so high, they can't afford to have quality control either. That's a business side of it decision, not in. It doesn't always work. There's a company in the past that, you know, I dealt with, and during a school shooting, Taurus shut down their one department so they can keep up with mass production, and it showed. It was bad. I mean, I had barrels that looked like they just went through a machine shop and never even cleaned them. I mean, they were so terrible. And
was it a bunch of gas blocks?
Yeah, gas blocks were a problem, you know. Barrels on them were just, you can see all the machine marks in them. They like didn't polish anything, and they were just trying to get everything they possibly could out. And I'm sure this last stint through COVID, I mean, it was what, 2-3 years long deal, and now ammo is still a problem on certain things. Now powder is going to be a problem to get, supposedly, and obviously we can go, that's a big rabbit hole we can get into, but we're not going to. But it's just, it's a weird thing right now.
All right. Any other guns we want to talk about before we kind of move on?
I wouldn't say anything in particular, but it all goes back to, like Brett said last time, go whatever you're going to shoot, make sure it's what's comfortable for you. There's so many good guns on the market right now that it's hard to say, hey, here's the top five, because what, like, I shoot good, you won't shoot good, what feels good to me may not, but there's a lot of good guns. Everybody from Ruger, the new Tauruses have been great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not, in my opinion, there's very few bad guns on the market anymore, just because technology and everything has caught up to what used to be, you know, a budget gun was maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Most of them as a whole have been good. You know, it's just what fits you and what you're good with.
Real quick to get back to your revolver versus semi-auto question that we started this whole thing on. A revolver is going away as far as people carrying, but there is a time and place. If you have a woman or man that doesn't really want to think about anything when they're going to protect themselves, you pull a revolver out and you pull the trigger until it clicks. I mean, until it stops. I mean, that's it. There's nothing, there's no safeties, there's no slides to rack, there's no loading, there's nothing. You just literally pull it out of the holster and you pull the trigger to get away is what you're trying
to do. There's way less that could go wrong. You don't deal with the jamming issues. If one round doesn't fire, you pull the trigger again. It's not a jam and malfunctioning.
And we talked about putting out a battery on a semi-auto if they're up really close to you. A revolver doesn't have that problem. You pull the trigger, like I said, until it's going bang.
I know quite a few cops that, as a backup pistol, have a revolver. Most of them have it on their vest somewhere. But if they ever were on the ground or something in that situation, you don't have to worry about it pressing against something and not shooting.
That's what my father-in-law had a revolver on his ankle, and he still may carry it, even though he's retired now. But definitely when he was active duty, he had one.
Most of them do, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that out there, that revolvers are not, there's nothing negative about them. They're just not as popular anymore.
And they're not obsolete.
No.
They're still around. There's people that want them, but it's mostly the little bit older generation. There's very few people in their 20s that are coming in asking for a revolver.
Now, I will say, you know, we see some weird stuff come through the holster shop. I saw them making an inside the waistband holster, and it wasn't a Colt Python, but it was for a giant, like, bear hunting revolver.
Yeah.
The other day. Yeah. I mean, this thing had a barrel like a foot long on it, so.
Well, I made one for a friend of ours here locally that it was a Taurus, wasn't it, 17 HMR revolver?
It's
like a 6.5-inch barrel tracker, 17 HMR pistol, which is just cool to begin with, but they do hogs and stuff all the time, so that's what they'd use for the hogs. And he's like, I just need a holster. And he wears bibs all the time. I just need a holster. We made him an inside holster with an ulti clip.
He loves it.
And he loves it. He shows everybody. I'm like, quit showing people. Because that was a pain in the ass to make. I don't want to make another one. Quit showing people.
Well, it's funny you talk about the holsters. And, like, do we have any plans in the future to do, like, any chest rigs? Because I saw, like, a lot of people, like my brother-in-law, is going to go, like, fly fishing, and he wants something like up in bear country he can have strapped to his chest while he's out there fly fishing.
To be fair, Mr. R&D, do we have any plans for chest rigs?
Well, my plans are different than the boss man's plans.
I mean, you're the R&D guy.
The Kydex part is the easy part. The strap to fit everybody as a universal strap is the hard part. No different than like leather shoulder holsters, and why you don't see very many on the market. It's hard to get a good strap system that fits everyone well.
Okay.
So it's just that dynamic. If it wasn't for that, we could have them out in a week. Because, I mean, the Kydex part is right in our wheelhouse of what we do. Finding the strap system is a little bit different. Because I've seen a lot of different strap systems on the different ones on the market, and they all have their flaws. I mean, there's guys that come in and want us to make a strap system for one of their holsters, and it's not our wheelhouse, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Well, and the other thing that made me think about it is on that strap system, there's not a lot of pressure to keep it in place, because the video I saw that made me think about it this weekend was this guy's riding a mountain bike, and it's to show how great the retention is on this holster, and he's going off jumps and everything, and his firearm is right in that chest rig. But that thing's got to be so tight in there. I don't know if he needed to draw it, whether he could physically draw it out of there or not.
And that's the hardest part about the strap system is how to make it. You don't want it straight nylon where it has no give, because then you go to move and you're trapped. But if it has too much flex, your gun's going to be flopping the whole time you're walking or climbing or biking or whatever you're doing. So it's just, I don't know the right answer.
I also, for me hunting wise, I use a chest rig, but it's a pack. It's because I have binoculars, I have a rangefinder, I have my handgun on me, you know, everything, a flashlight. Just have a holster on my chest.
Little Debbie's?
Yes. Hey, I don't have a holster for them.
You got to get the Christmas tree cakes. Yeah. Those are the best
listen,
ones.
Listen. We don't use
my a holster. My zebra cake's going.
We don't use holsters for those. But.
No, but I do think that's a really good idea. You know, everybody wants to, you know, make fun of like tactical and all that. But if you get a chest rig, you can put, we've got attachments that will go on chest rigs for our Kydex holsters now. You can put a tech lock or something on there and, you know, Molly attachments, stuff like that, and put one of our holsters on a chest rig where it's not necessarily just straps, but it may be a more stable platform.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. All right. Well, we will move on. Next part, we're going to start doing this, try and do it weekly, but just to try and stay topical and stay with questions viewers may have that are coming up in the news. This week, we're going to go over an article that was in the Colorado Springs Gazette, and this kind of caught my attention at first because Colorado tends to lean more left on a lot of their policies, whether it be, you know, recreational drugs or, you know, whatever it may be. But this article is about school boards are considering concealed carry for faculty and staff, essentially, where teachers, coaches, you know, nurses, whoever, as long as they've got a concealed carry permit, can go and be school protection officers, basically. And it doesn't give specific numbers, and I should have got them, but it said a growing number of Colorado's 178 public school districts are enhancing security by allowing screened and trained faculty and staff, meaning principals, coaches, janitors, teachers, school nurses, and secretaries, to volunteer security officers who can carry concealed guns. Goes on to say, they're quoted by saying, "We have a crisis in this country of school massacres that must be resolved. Arming faculty and staff is not the right course for all districts, but for others it might provide the best, most tactically effective and efficient way to assure a mass murderer won't be a lone gunman while cops race to the scene. It's a sad fact, but the best defense against a bad person with a gun is often a good person with a gun. Typically, students, faculty, and staff have no option but to hide under desks or in closets as a shooter kills at will without resistance. Few districts can afford an adequate number of uniformed security guards who are easily detected by criminals." Goes on to say, rural districts in Colorado, law enforcement has a 20-minute arrival time to most scenes, and in Colorado Springs, they're having a shortage of officers, like everybody is, and their average response time is 14 minutes and 21 seconds, and that's enough time for a psychopath to do unfathomable damage. So it's kind of a lot in the first part of this article, and we'll go through the rest later, but just initial thoughts on what do you guys think about faculty and schools being able to concealed carry. We all have kids in schools. When I read it, I kind of had to digest it for a minute.
I personally think it would be a great thing with the right stipulations on it. My first initial thought are teachers are hard to come by nowadays as well, no different than police officers. Kids are a whole different generation. We're in the generation of you can't say anything to any kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you deal with all that. So they already have a difficult job. You just have to find the people that are willing to do that and take that responsibility and go through the right training. Because as far as a concealed carry in a school is going to be a different thing than a normal concealed carry. Because you got everybody around you. You got 20 kids in your classroom. It's not just a defending yourself situation. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, then you have, if law enforcement comes, which they will, but the time that passes before, even if it's a 2-minute response time, a lot can happen in 2 minutes in that situation. So that's where this would be good. But also you got to realize there's got to be enough systems in place that everybody is on the same page so that when police SWAT does come in the school, how they know that teacher with the gun is not who they are targeting. You know, there's a lot that goes into it, but I think training would be the biggest thing. In my opinion, training is the most overlooked thing in concealed carry in general.
Absolutely.
As And that's why we talk about training all the time, because people don't think about it. They, in my opinion, they don't fully realize the responsibility they're taking. And in that atmosphere, it's even more training, because then you got protocols on what should happen. I don't think you need teachers going to search for that person. But in schools, for instance, there's the door stops that they can use. There's all sorts of
shelter-in-place mechanisms.
Yeah. Yes,
the statistics of them locking behind a door, and it's just, it's out there. I don't obviously have the numbers, but if you lock yourself and people with you behind a door, you're just less likely to get affected by it, because they're not going to break through a door to because it's such happening. It's happening so fast.
Yeah, and my initial thoughts, and like I said, I thought about it for a day or two, is number one, like I said, we don't want these people to be police officers, because that's not what they are. So they, I don't feel like they should be, you know, pursuing the suspect. I would say, you know, if they can shelter in place and protect kids, that's a good thing. The other thing is, your people that are teachers have a servant's heart, where they're not, they're some of our finest going by right now.
Yeah.
Not that police officers don't have a servant's heart, but like, they're more nurturing typically to children and stuff like that. So I would be hesitant at first to make sure that people, number one, if they're going to carry, they need to be willing to use that firearm if it comes down to it. Number two would be securing it while they're in class. You know, making sure kids, you know, can't reach it, or, you know, it's in a good secure location at all times.
I think the key to it, for what you're talking about, is the concealed part. Just like last week, we talked about concealed carry versus open carrying. Teacher, open carrying wouldn't be what you wanted.
Mm-mm.
You wouldn't want any of those kids to know what teacher, because you're not going to get all the teachers to do it. And quite frankly, you probably shouldn't, because some teachers just don't have that skill set. You know, this shouldn't be a everybody do it type of thing. But those students should never know who is concealing, in my opinion.
Which kind of leads us down to the next part of the article, and it goes on to say, any district considering this must contemplate the concerns of informed detractors before greenlighting. Board members should adopt impeccably high standards that only allow those who take rigorous gun safety defense courses to be selected. Schools should certify only those volunteers among that group, that they must set a high fitness bar and character bar, and they should be trained by law enforcement professionals to act like cops in the event of a school. So when you break that down, like, police officer standard certification nationwide post-training is 664 hours minimum.
Yeah.
That's a lot, because you are training for, if you're going to be a security officer in the school, you might not need to know every aspect of those 664 hours, but I'm going to guess it's a vast majority of them, because if you're going to be involved in shoot, don't shoot situations, detaining people, reacting to a crisis, everything that goes into it, that's going to be a vast amount of training. I know in Missouri, because I wanted to look it up and just see, because that's where we're out of, so I was curious about it. But they've actually got laws on the books that says people can be designated. They have to have a concealed carry firearms permit. They can carry a concealed firearm or defensive spray in the school. They have the same authority to detain or use force against any person on school property as provided to people under Chapter 563, which is like the law enforcement chapter. But the class, when we talk about the training class, Missouri's got a training class lined out. And just from the University of Missouri's website, they offer a 3-week, it's a 120-hour course to certify people as SPOs. And it trains them in all sorts of stuff, from use of force, emergency response, building searches, survival mentality, handcuffing and restraint, weapon retention, disarming and ground fighting techniques, basic first aid and CPR, combat first aid, and 40 hours of firearms training. That, in my opinion, just reading that, is probably all necessary, but that is a big ask for somebody who has a master's degree in teaching and their primary focus.
So, and are grossly underpaid to begin with.
And that's both of you are going to lead to my opinion on the whole matter. So you handed this article to me and wanted me to read over it. And I'll kind of go over my reaction to you handing me the article. I don't like the idea. And the biggest problem is I think there's a mental focus that we're not focusing on in schools everywhere in this country. And to just put guns in schools, I mean, there's a situation in a town just a few towns over where one of the teachers was one of the shooters, not in a school obviously setting, but at home or whatever the reason may be. You just, I don't know. I believe in guns and I believe in protecting yourselves. I don't know if I want my kid's teacher having a gun on them while they're in school. I just don't know if I want that. I don't, they're not paid enough. They're not going to have the training. They're not going
to
have.
Well, I think it goes to the question of, for like your opinion right now though, goes because you got parent teacher conferences. You know who your teachers
you're
are.
Absolutely right. And I'm only, this is only my opinion.
You know
and
what I mean? So.
But I'm also looking at, because schools, let's just be factual, they're government ran. They barely have enough money to pay these schools to feed the kids. And they can't even keep that in check.
Brief interjection, that's a part I didn't get to on this. The cost for this training is $2,100 per person, but that's no meals, that's no lodging. So are you asking teachers who are underpaid to pay $2,100 to get certified, or are you going to ask the school districts that already are cutting sports and not feeding kids?
And just a little insight, because I had a sister-in-law that was a teacher. They're buying their own furniture and toys and books and stuff for their own classrooms. That should tell you something. Teachers have to provide most of the materials in their classrooms. They're given bare minimums to teach our kids. And then if they wanted to, you know what I mean, to ask them to go through the training, because go to that course would be fantastic. But you're going to mandatory do it every year, probably. I would assume.
I would think.
What's irritating to me, and it's the same subject but different, is I'll just throw our local schools here. We got two schools within 10 miles of here that has multi-million-dollar high school football fields.
Yep.
College-type stadiums in a public high school, but they will not pay to have more than one SRO at a school.
Absolutely.
Which is that crazy. Many kids, which and is crap.
I know one of my former drivers, he refs high school football, and I will not name the school around here, but Google it and you can find it. And he said the head football coach, just for coaching football at this school, was getting $100,000 on top of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, we were paying $100,000 so the high school can have a better football team?
I think at some point the priorities of any government, but schools, part of it, are way off kilter as far as that. There's schools that, there's those doorstop things, I can't remember what they're called, that are proven to, you cannot get in that room. If you look at the school shootings, they go down the hallway and try to get in whatever rooms. If every one of them shut, they would have zero targets.
And
anyways, and they won't spend that money, but they'll spend $10 million on a high school football field.
Well, and I won't say what school my kids go to, because I don't want it out there for everybody, but it's a newer school. And to even get into the school, every door has a camera on it, and you get buzzed into a sally port. Oh. And you have to show your ID, and it's bulletproof glass around there. Yeah. So and then you have to go into the office, and then you got to get buzzed out of there to even get into the school. And that is, you know, new technology, and they built it into the school. But you can retrofit a lot of schools to have some sort of security measures in place. And there's, again, enough off-duty cops always looking for overtime that would love to pick up shifts. And even, you know, I would be more inclined to, there's all sorts of former military guys that have great skill sets. They're natural protectors, defenders. Lots of military guys who are looking for work in their skill set who would be great SROs.
Well, because at the end of the day, no matter whether this article, whether it's a good idea or not, the participating factor is how many people you have capable of doing that in a school. And some schools will have zero that are capable of it. So does that mean there's just no protection in that school? No. I mean, it comes down to tax dollars, and I don't care where your taxes are. What if you look at like our commercial taxes? I have zero kids in this county. The businesses in this county and the amount of money that goes to the school for this county, why are they using that? You know, they could use that on different things, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right. So that'll kind of wrap up that. I mean, we kind of discussed the concerns, and, you know, I think ongoing training would be the big thing. No matter what school districts go, I would rather have somebody there protecting the kids or not. And especially when you get out into the smaller, more rural districts that especially don't have as much money. You know, I think this may be more viable, but again, it's going to be district by district, and I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. There's just, you know, a lot of things to think about.
The thing is, though, if you look at most of the shootings anywhere, not just schools, it's in areas that people don't think people have guns, schools being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a lot of the country areas or whatever, the crime rate is different for a reason. You know, it's the, what do they call it, soft zones or whatever, gun-free zones where stuff happens. And that's part of it because they know there's one SRO in that building. I don't care if you put one SRO, he can be the Navy SEAL. You can't protect a building with one dude. You just can't when you're talking about the size of schools we have here. It's just a...
Not to get too deep, but I know where a lot of billions are getting sent. That could easily put a lot of SROs and a lot 100%. Of schools across this country.
Well,
and that's a topic that we probably shouldn't get into, but
it's just
if you guys want my opinion, teachers should not be that person
doing
that. There, we have a lot of, like you said, cops, military, there's a lot of them that are qualified to do that.
Well, and there's a lot of them that get out and, you know, when you get out of the military, they're like, all right, see ya. And you're left out into the world. There's not a lot of transition fund, which is why you see
they don't know how to do anything else.
Right. And so that's why like Rob O'Neill, he's got the Special Operators Transition Fund. I think it's called something different now, but it's to address that. You've got highly trained guys and the suicide rate is out the roof because they went through that. Now they have nothing. And, you know, I think you could really solve a lot of problems, you know, with one solution.
Yep, like Brett said, there's a lot of government, schools, government, White House. As far as you want to take that money spent, not even spent in this country, that could put 10 SROs in every school.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine how much safety you could put in on every school in this country.
And still save money, but we're sending it other places.
On top of the schools that they're closing because they don't have money to give them. I mean, come on. Our tax dollars across this country's just not being spent well, and I don't think our teachers should bear that right now. And that's my opinion. You know, nothing's fact on that.
I think some could, but I think overall you're not going to get enough that are capable of it to really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I ultimately come back to kind of where you guys are. The one person can do one thing really great. So if you ask Brett to run a gun shop, he's going to do it really good. Or if you ask Brett to come run the holster shop, he's going to do it really good. But if you ask Brett to run the gun shop and the holster shop, you can't do it.
Not capable.
And I think that's what you're asking teachers to do when you're asking them to be nurturing educators. You know, because you got kids from all different backgrounds coming to school. And sometimes school is these kids' relief from a terrible home life. So you're asking teachers to, in some cases, be parental figures to these kids. But then also have to be cops at the same time.
And in schools now, teachers are afraid to say anything for kids because you get sued for hurting somebody's feelings nowadays.
Yeah.
Imagine why as a teacher getting paid whatever they're getting paid, not near enough, why would you want the legal responsibility? They're sworn in law officers that are on trial for right shootings. How are you going to get them to take that responsibility even if they are capable?
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't even thought about, but it's really something, you know, because they don't have body cams either, and I think they're at an extreme disadvantage.
They're the bad guy already just by hurting whoever's feelings or saying something to them in a derogatory way, or they're mean, and they're getting fired, and the kids are always right, which is why we have a kid issue nowadays, but that's a whole different subject.
All right, hey, good talk, guys. I enjoyed that. We're going to have to do more of that moving on. Viewer question of the week comes from Michelle in Kansas City. And her question, Kevin, this is before Brett and I got here, so this is going to be all you, big dog. How did you come up with the name and logo for Muddy River Tactical?
Well, that's a weird story. So anytime you start, so this was probably, we talked about how it went from making them just for myself and then the guys at work. This was when we started selling the first ones on Etsy. I put them on Etsy, or was thinking about putting them on Etsy, and I'm like, well, I don't even know what I'm going to call them. So trying to think of a name on anything sounds weird from the get-go. You know, I mean, you can be a new company and come up with the best name, and it sounds weird at the time because you're not used to it or whatever. Well, I was driving the truck at Pure Air. It was in North Kansas City. It was at the first Pure Air building. So no matter what, everywhere you went, you crossed the Missouri River within a half mile of that building. You literally got to the stoplight, turned to the left, and you're going across the Missouri River. And kind of the Missouri River in Missouri is always muddy and always rolling and stuff like that. So literally it came, I was crossing over the river, and just something about the muddy river, because it was after a bunch of rain, it was flowing and muddy and up high on the levees. I'm like, well, muddy river. And then at first I was thinking muddy river holsters, but at the first you never know, and it's worked out now, but you never know if you're going to broad out into anything else. Because like I said, I made the wallets at first too. So I was making the wallets. So it's like, well, maybe not muddy river holsters. And then tactical is kind of a broad term in the whole industry, as far as it can go from ARs to pistols to gear to whatever. So I thought it was just a kind of encompass thing, where if I was going to sell the wallets, it didn't sound weird like it was just holsters or whatever. At that time, I wasn't thinking about a gun shop, and you know, I didn't even think I could sell holsters. So that's how Muddy River started. And then the logo thing, I actually took it, believe it or not, it was, I can't think of the website, but you can send your name to them, and it's like the freelance guys.
Yeah.
You send whatever the company's name is, and then they'll send you back like 5 or 10 or whatever. And if you choose one, then you can purchase it for like $20 or whatever. It's just, you know, freelance guys doing it, and they take 10 minutes to throw it together. And that's actually where it came from, and it's been the same ever since.
All right. And there's minor, like, I don't know, the hoodies behind Kevin that you guys have been seeing all episodes. We took that and in-house kind of switched it up. So you'll see some variations of it. But
yeah, so we switched that one mainly for like the gun shop, because it's got Platte City on it where we're at. But like the deer of it is for like a lot of guys that come in the shop or deer hunters. And the mountains part's kind of the same. And it's just a different look at it. But like if you look at overall on the internet, the river rolling through the mountains is what most people identify it as.
That's pretty cool. All right. So with that, if they go to our website, muddyrivertactical.com, go to our store, pick out something you really like. If they enter the code MRT, Muddy River Tactical, MRT podcast, they get 15% off their order. And that will also work in the gun shop, but not on guns. We're talking about holsters.
Correct.
Yes.
Holsters. Okay. Website, it's good for everything on there. That's hats, hoodies, t-shirts, the whole nine yards.
Whatever you can find on there. I think the only thing that's on sale right now is the Harley holsters. We make the Harley mount holsters. They're already on sale for like 20% off coming into spring. So those won't count just because they're already discounted more than that, but anything else will.
So just quick question for people, because I know we haven't talked about them yet on here. The Harley holsters, do those only fit Harleys, or will those fit any other saddlebags?
We haven't tried any. Have you tried any other saddlebags?
Yeah, it's just got to have a screw adapter style saddlebag. So like there are saddlebags that just mount on a motorcycle, but Harleys have a special screw that you can take on and off.
Okay.
So the Harleys older than, what is it, 17?
Yeah.
Have like a pin in them instead of a screw. So if you have the pin, you have to update your hardware to the new style screw in, and then you're fine.
Okay. And for the people at home that can't see this, or they're maybe driving, it's like almost like a Z-shaped bracket. It's not a Z-shaped, but kind of lightning bolt shaped bracket.
Yeah.
That goes from the screw, and then our holster screws onto it, where you Kydex inside holster.
Yeah. So a lot of it came from I had a bike, and Brett had a bike, and now he's got my old bike. But anyways, Worth Harley here in KC, we do the bike nights and stuff down there. And guys asking about it. And the main thing is, because the question we get is, well, why wouldn't you carry it on yourself? Well, if you're around motorcycles very much, trying to conceal one in a t-shirt going 70 miles an hour down the highway,
yeah,
it's very hard to conceal. So it goes to the debate of open carry versus concealed carry. On a motorcycle, you're not concealed. So that way you can conceal it in your saddlebag. And then when you leave the bike, you can put it in a regular holster and carry it. But if you're going down the highway, you still have access to it close. It's secure. God forbid you ever wrecked your bike or something. It's secure in the saddlebag instead of going down the road. There's a lot of things to it, but it's mainly the concealed factor of it.
Yeah, the only other ones I've seen recently, and again, it came up on an ad, was one that like mounted to the handlebars, but then you're open carrying it and it's right by their throttle. And
yeah, I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well just wear an outside holster and let everybody see it, you know. And I mean, there's, in the next week or two, we're going to do an episode on open carry versus concealed carry. But in general, most people don't want people knowing it's there.
Agreed. All right. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we let them go for today?
No, I'd just say, because the whole thing was mainly on carry guns. If you look on our YouTube channel, there's a whole video I did on it too that goes into some different guns and things to choose. But pick the biggest gun that you're comfortable with concealing, because you will shoot it better. Don't just automatically go get the smallest gun and assume you're going to shoot it well. You know, get, I'm not saying carry a 5-inch barrel gun, but don't, smaller is not always better. And sometimes
real quick around the table, just because there's probably people wondering what we carry. And this isn't just what are you carrying right now type scenario, not what you should carry. I carry a P365 SAS because I have a belly and I can't have sights or anything on top. So I like the SAS version. What do you carry, Kevin?
SIG 365, regular one.
Man, I got a Springfield XDS 9mm.
There you go.
So we just got to keep them jaded with the old stuff. I mean, in reality, the 365s are just, they've been around almost the longest. They really started the Micro 9 trend. And just overall, they feel good in my hand. They shoot good. They're hard to beat, in my opinion.
Agree.
Awesome. Well, as always, go to muddyrivertactical.com. We have a tab on there. What's it say? Videos, media? What do you call it?
I think it's videos or podcast.
Okay. You can get all of our gun reviews. You can get all of our podcasts. You can find links to all of our socials on there. If you have any questions, you can always email us, support@muddyrivertactical.com. You can give us a call.
And please shoot us emails with questions you guys want, either questions of the week or what you want episodes on. Because we talk about this stuff all day, so we can ramble on about different subjects. But if you guys give us what you want to hear, then we can go on certain subjects, even if it's a question of the week where it's 5 minutes thing, but answer what you guys are looking for, because it may be stuff that we haven't necessarily thought of or don't talk about in depth enough, just because for us it's normal. We do it every day. You know, it's just different.
Over the weekend, I had somebody ask me, and maybe this would be a great question while we're talking about, what's your funniest hunting story? So maybe next week we can all share a favorite hunting story, because I'm sure between all of us, we could probably have an episode just on funny hunting stories.
Nope.
I don't know if Brett wants to do that episode.
Nope. Do we just need to do it now again?
Nope.
Nope. This is your episode,
this
Brett.
This is fantastic.
Brett will take his headphones off and leave.
Mine's more embarrassing than it is funny.
Oh, I've got one of those, too. I've got a work story that's the most embarrassing story.
Yeah, we'll save that for another week, because we'll do it at the first and then watch him be awkward the rest of the show.
Mm.
Okay. All right. Well, to everybody that's still with us, thank you for joining us for this episode. MuddyRiverTactical.com. We appreciate you guys, and we will see you next week.
See you guys. Thanks for joining us.